don't have enough time to sit down and read all the best Bitcoin articles? Well, let us read them for you. This is a Crypto Economy Quick Read. What is up, Crypto Economy crew? I hope everyone had a wonderful weekend. I was very busy and got a lot of stuff done, and I think we got a number of really fun announcements. If you did not see on Twitter, I have officially released Quick Read Collections. This is something that I'm doing on the website. I don't know how else to actually make this work currently. I tried to figure out how to do this on Podbean, but after speaking with some support people, it looks like, their response to a number of different things that they do not offer was, we don't offer it, but we're going to in the future, maybe someday, possibly. 2 weeks, TM. It doesn't look like Podbean is probably ever going to have this option available for playlists. But this is exactly the kind of podcast that works really good with playlists, because hardly any of the stuff that I read is actually time sensitive. A lot of it's just really good details that, even 2 years from now might be a really, really great thing to come back and read or listen to, so on and so forth. So I wanted to have, particularly with the Lightning Network being a great example, so that's what I wanted to start with. I found some code on GitHub that somebody had made, put in some short code. It does take a while for me to build these, and I'm doing it all manually. I'm trying to figure out which episodes to include, which ones not. And now I've got over 200 some episodes to go through, so it's not a very fast process. I spent most of the day Saturday on one though, and put in all the details, and it seems to work. There were a couple little issues, but it also seems to work without... The big thing was that I wanted to be able to do this so that people could play it, like, on their phone and then just keep listening to it. It's over 11 hours. It's like 11 hours and 13 minutes right now. And anytime I do another episode on the Lightning Network, I will be adding it to this playlist. But you can go to the website on cryptoeconomy.life and the collections and the Lightning Network, and if you hit play, you can minimize the browser, you can lock your phone, and you'll still have the play and pause option available from the lock screen, and it will keep playing. You can keep listening to it. Or at least I know I can on my iPhone. I can't imagine it wouldn't work on Android, but I don't have one to test it on. And so I'm really happy that I have finally found a solution to that, because I was honestly, that was giving me quite the headache, and I intend to do that for Bitcoin and finance, like with all the financial industry developments and discussion going on, and then also just Bitcoin development in general around the code, the theory of money, and then economics. So there's going to be a lot of different categories we got going on here as we move forward, and I'm going to sort all that out, and I'll be releasing them on the website as we go. So don't forget to follow me on Twitter at The Crypto Economy and subscribe to the podcast so you know when those things are released. And that'll be a great way to actually get to old episodes without having to manually sort through 200, and the search index on Podbean does not work very well either. If you don't have everything typed exactly as is, you're not going to find the episode you're looking for. So that is a big announcement that I'm very happy about to actually have available now. And then in addition, I have my Casa node fully up and running. Took a little bit of tweaking, and today, early this morning, I sorted out my router issue. I think all I needed to do was port forward to the Bitcoin node and the Lightning node on Casa, and it seems to be working. I checked it on the canyouseeme.org to see if it was talking, and it appears to be. And now that I've tested two receiving transactions, seems to be operating normally. I was having a bit of an issue with receiving transactions up until then, because everything was just, it would just spin indefinitely, and all my receiving payments failed except for one, and that was like one out of I don't know, 20 that I tried. So maybe that one's a fluke, or there was some reason that one worked specifically and the others didn't. I don't know. But now two have worked in a row since I have gotten the port issue worked out. So I'm hoping this solves it for good, and that was in fact my issue. I'm going to have my Lightning Node address and a nickname, which is actually cryptoeconomy.life. So if you want to just find me on a Lightning Explorer, I'm at cryptoeconomy.life. But I'll post my actual Lightning Node, and I may be updating my Bitcoin address as well, because I would like to actually use the Bitcoin address in my node so that whenever you guys send me a donation, it actually helps me fund new channels on my Lightning Node. So this could be really, really fun, and I've been just loving playing with this thing. I played Lightning Spin for like an hour the other day just so I could mess around with it, and I kept doing it in 1,000 Satoshi blocks, which is like a nickel, but yeah, it's been an absolute blast. And I'm really, really excited about this stuff. It doesn't work flawlessly. There's still a lot of kinks to work out. But I'm getting a bunch of different video clips and stuff together to walk everybody through the setup. And then sending and receiving and the router configuration, all that good stuff. So hopefully I'll have that out soon. I want to keep testing to make sure I do have this thing in full working order so that I do have all the instructions necessary to make this thing work like it should work. Okay, and I think that's the bulk of stuff we got going on. We're still in order for my article tomorrow, it looks like, so don't miss that one. Today, we are hitting one, since we hit Nick Bhatia's article on custody last Friday, I want to hit he linked to the Fidelity Digital Assets Medium post titled Custody in the Age of Digital Assets. So that will be our quick read for today, and we're going to go ahead and jump into it. And it's a really, really great piece, and it just shows how much Fidelity is doing on this front. And it's really exciting to see the kind of the financial industry perspective on this whole thing and how they look at these assets. So without further ado, let's go ahead and jump into Fidelity's Medium post, Custody in the Age of Digital Assets. The market for digital assets has evolved dramatically since the release of Satoshi Nakamoto's Bitcoin white paper nearly 10 years ago. From Bitcoin's origins as a peer-to-peer system of value transfer to the development of smart contracts and countless other blockchain applications, cryptography-based digital assets have become one of the most disruptive and revolutionary technologies since the advent of the internet. Today, there are at least 1,600 crypto coins and tokens, according to CoinMarketCap.com. Although it may be hard to think of another market that has developed as quickly, it is not difficult to see parallels between the development of digital assets and that of traditional asset classes such as stocks, bonds, and commodities. Digital assets may soon become recognized as investable stores of value, tradable on global licensed exchanges and accessible to a broad swath of individuals and institutions across the globe. And just as with stocks, bonds, or commodities, investors will want to keep these assets safe from theft or loss. As the industry has evolved, solutions aimed at keeping digital assets safe have continued to develop. Enhancements to offline storage, multi-signature protocols, and other security measures are aimed at increasing investor confidence that their assets are secure. These developments are important, but for institutions holding digital assets on behalf of their clients, they may not go far enough. For institutions, the most pressing unanswered question is how, if they choose to hold digital assets for their customers, these assets will be secured. The answer is that full-service institutional custody solutions are needed. Solutions as equally robust as those provided for traditional assets. Most digital assets function as cryptographic bearer instruments, the keys to which, once lost or stolen, render the asset inaccessible and unrecoverable to its rightful owner, making secure custodianship of primary importance. Custody services for these types of assets are particularly technological, requiring new and different approaches, yet are based on sound financial principles. In this white paper, we explain why custody services are of paramount importance to institutions and their clients, how financial custody services have evolved, and what all this means going forward for those holding digital assets. Additionally, we will cover the history of financial assets custody, an overview of the current landscape for digital asset custody, unique challenges associated with the custody of digital assets, key unanswered questions, and our perspective. This primer is intended to be an educational tool for institutions seeking a better understanding of the custody issues surrounding this emerging asset class. For simplicity and consistency, the term digital assets is applied broadly throughout this white paper to describe Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies, cryptographically issued securities, and other digital tokens. Custody through time. In the simplest terms, custodians safekeep financial assets. Financial institutions acting as custodians do not have legal ownership of stocks, bonds, commodities, or other assets. Those rights remain with the individual or institution that own the asset, but they are tasked with holding and securing these assets, as well as performing other functions, such as settlement services, record keeping, and foreign exchange transactions. United States financial markets have long benefited from investors having confidence that their money is secure, but this hasn't always been the case. Before the stock market crash of 1929, investors were responsible for securing the paper certificates that claimed rights to their investments. This form of self-custody, however, started to fade away rapidly after the crash because investors recognized the inherent risks in this system. It was around this time that trust companies and other financial intermediaries evolved to provide custody services for the holders of stock certificates. Given the lack of technology during this period, these services involved the cumbersome physical transfer of certificates from one financial institution to another. From the 1930s through the 1960s, the number of securities exchanged in the United States grew exponentially. From 1965 to 1968 alone, the trading volumes on the New York Stock Exchange jumped from 5 million shares a day to 12 million, leading to a significant increase in the paperwork required to custody, clear, and settle these transactions. The trust companies and intermediaries were quickly becoming overwhelmed with these changing ownership records. This paperwork burden and its inefficiencies, along with growth in the securities markets and the need for securities-related services, led to the 1973 creation of what would become the Depository Trust and Clearing Corporation, DTCC, which established the first set of centralized ledgers and certificates of clearing. Eventually, depository functions throughout the United States would be consolidated into the DTCC. Shortly after the creation of the DTCC, the Employee Retirement Income Security Act of 1974, ERISA, became law, making significant changes to how U.S. pension funds invest and manage assets. Key to these changes was the requirement that plans separate investment management and custody of plan assets. As mutual fund investing accelerated, quote, global custody became a necessity as investors required custodians to secure their investments across an ever-increasing number of securities from around the world. Today, four large banks, BNY Mellon, JP Morgan, State Street, and Citigroup, provide the bulk of global custody services, with approximately $114 trillion in assets under custody. Recent trends suggest this highly concentrated model will continue, as ongoing barriers to entry have prevented other firms from challenging these incumbents. Decentralization revisited. In many ways, the creation of Bitcoin and its underlying blockchain technology has turned our understanding of custody and asset ownership on its head, because blockchain technologies enable the confirmation of transactions without the need for centralized verification. Questions of asset ownership can be answered more efficiently and with more clarity than in the past. This ability to instantly and accurately identify who owns a particular asset without requiring a third-party intermediary will have a profound impact on financial services transactions, including the clearing and settlement of securities and other asset transactions. Blockchain architecture may also dramatically alter how securities are traded and settled, potentially altering the future role for those deeply involved in the current process. This transformation is important for a number of reasons, including the potential for reduced systemic risk, since securities will no longer be held and cleared through the same few entities. Paradoxically, a system of clearing, settlement, and custody that started as completely decentralized and is now fully centralized may end up once again being decentralized by the technologies behind digital assets. Of the lessons learned from the 2008 financial crisis, many agree a system centered around complicated, opaque investment products issued by a central few may require a dramatic update. Would things have been different had the transactions of the large investment banks and brokerages been recorded on a distributed, decentralized blockchain? The move to the DTCC was a move away from bearer assets, which became cumbersome to manage, and toward a system of interconnected ledgers with costly reconciliation processes between those ledgers. What we're witnessing with digital assets is a move back toward bearer assets. Now that users of these protocols have figured out how to trade them quickly, digitally, and without any possibility for the types of errors that lead to costly reconciliation processes. Digital asset custody today. It's important to remember that with digital assets such as Bitcoin and Ether, individuals can hold essentially an unlimited amount of currency, almost anywhere. Unlike paper and metals, for example, digital assets do not require the traditional safes and vaults typically associated with banks. This type of accessibility to spendable assets is groundbreaking and fascinating, to say the least. But it also has created new risks. When Bitcoin was first traded, there were no offline storage products or third-party services offering to keep it safe. As Bitcoin became more visible and interest increased, additional digital tokens emerged and the ecosystem began to rapidly develop, providing a variety of services to keep these digital assets secure. As part of this evolution, exchanges appeared that, unlike registered stock exchanges, were taking custody of digital assets in addition to providing a trading venue. However, it has become apparent that exchanges, by themselves, are not immune to security failures. Institutional concerns for client safety have fueled the demand for custodial services, separate from exchanges, that can provide safe, secure storage for digital assets. Unique challenges. There are aspects to the custody of digital assets that contrast sharply with the security necessary for the safekeeping of stocks and other types of assets. These distinctive features present a number of challenges, the most notable being how to secure the private keys of the owners of the digital assets being stored. Private keys are a unique, large number generated by a digital asset wallet and assigned mathematically to transactions originating from that wallet. The private key is entirely specific to the holder. Private keys are used to confirm that the owner of a digital asset is in fact who he or she claims to be via cryptographic digital signature technology. Because these keys represent ownership of digital assets, they are never shared publicly. Instead, for digital asset transactions, a public key is shared with parties to the transaction, which functions as a destination address for receiving funds. For a digital asset to leave its wallet, the owner of the wallet needs to sign using his or her private key, which again is not shared publicly. The decentralized network of computers, or nodes, then verifies the transaction details before permanently adding them to the ledger on the blockchain. A familiar analogy for this public key cryptography is that the public key is like your email address, and the private key is like the password to your email account. You'd never share your password with a friend, but you do freely share your email address. Just as your friends can send a message to your email address, they can send digital assets to a digital asset address that is computed from your public key and can be freely shared. This analogy isn't perfect. The private key is more akin to cash than an account password. Passwords can be reset. Private keys cannot. The alphanumeric strings identify the owner of a digital asset, and because of the immutable nature of cryptography, if these keys are lost or stolen, so too is the digital asset. To make owning digital assets more accessible, custodial wallet providers and exchanges hold digital assets on behalf of the individual owner, giving the wallet provider or exchange full control over transactions. A benefit of this approach is that if the keys or passphrases to access the account are lost, the wallet provider can take steps to verify identities, making it easier to recover access. Because custody services require that the owner of digital assets hand control to a third party, it is imperative that the custody provider demonstrate vigorous security measures and robust technological protections. Without these rigorous technology, cyber, and operational procedures, digital assets could be put at risk. According to a 2017 study, 73% of digital asset exchanges take custody of private keys, while 23% let users maintain control over their keys. About 3/4 of large exchanges and just over 1/2 of small exchanges have a written policy in place for what happens in the event of a security breach. Currently, there are several approaches to safekeeping private keys. Those online are typically called hot storage, while offline storage is referred to as cold. Hot storage. Some of the most well-known exchanges provide this type of online wallet. Hot storage makes accessing and transacting with digital assets easy by keeping the private key online for accessibility by the user, which can leave the wallet and its user vulnerable to a security compromise. Generally speaking, for security reasons, most people prefer to keep as little of their digital assets in a hot wallet as possible. Cold storage. This could mean using a USB or digital asset-specific hardware storage product to control private keys, or simply keeping paper copies of private keys stored in vaults or other secure places. Cold storage is considered by many to be a preferred solution. Some firms use cold storage exclusively. Cold storage adds a manual step to accessing digital assets, but provides an additional level of security. This approach is sometimes compared to how gold is stored, but as we stated earlier, digital assets possess a number of unique attributes and make it difficult to draw perfect comparisons with the way traditional assets are safeguarded. Multi-signature. This new type of security provision is unique to digital assets and could affect the way the financial industry designs custody for other asset types in the future. By requiring more than one key to sign a transaction to send digital assets, the multi-sig approach ensures that one person is not solely responsible for securing a private key without ceding all the responsibility to a third party. Security solutions for individual investors continue to evolve. Many of these solutions include combinations of hot, cold, and multi-sig security. Some have proposed creating digital vaults that can make it easier to recover stolen or lost digital assets. Dozens of startups and established firms are developing ways to secure digital assets, but to date, few have focused on the unique challenges of institutional investors. The need for institutional solutions. Institutional clients represent a broad spectrum of financial firms, including mutual funds, investment managers, family offices, public and private retirement plans, registered investment advisors, insurance companies, corporations, endowments, and foundations. As many of these institutions serve as stewards for their clients' assets, these institutions must work with a custodian that can demonstrate a significant track record and experience in safeguarding client assets. Institutional investors need to know who is holding on to and securing the private keys. For these institutions, self-custody is essentially a non-starter, primarily due to regulations and the legal obligations that define their fiduciary responsibilities. Self-managed hardware wallets, regardless of how secure, are not a feasible option for a number of reasons. Institutional investors do not want to worry about private keys or maintaining passphrases for individual digital assets. Fortunately, the ecosystem is evolving to help increase access to products that will provide the same level of custodial service expected from other assets, despite the regulatory uncertainty. Outstanding questions. The custody requirements for digital assets have steadily evolved with this maturing asset class. The key issues for institutional investors generally fall into the following categories. Regulatory. How will existing regulations be applied to digital assets, and how will regulators respond to the growth of this asset class with new rules and guidance? Will policymakers take a dim view of pension plans investing in digital assets? Will digital asset firms pursue bank charters to offer bona fide custody services? Is every custodian in a multi-sig protocol considered an equal part custodian? Market network challenges. For custodians, trading digital assets in a volatile environment with a third party carries its own challenges. How will custodians respond to token, quote, airdrops or Bitcoin forks, for example? Will digital asset volatility limit the number of firms offering custody services? Security. How will security processes and standards evolve? How will institutional clients and custodians implement the highest levels of protection for digital assets? Will there be industry insurance solutions that will give institutions and their clients more comfort? Before traditional custodians go too far in their development of institutional quality services, the industry is hoping to see more institutional money in this space. However, institutional investors are finding it difficult to commit fully to digital assets until there is a reliable and respected custody solution. Our perspective. We expect continued growth in digital products and services, with many of them aimed at institutional investors. While this asset class continues to evolve, one constant is that the institutional adoption of digital assets depends on the arrival of professional custody solutions. Creating digital asset custody solutions will demand the continued efforts of a number of market participants, ranging from wallet providers to security firms, technology developers, and regulators. We also believe that as additional reputable firms enter the space, there will be an increase in market participation, contributing to the viability of digital assets. Over time, we believe securities will also become digitally native, and these assets will be more quickly introduced to market compared to new issuances today. We aim to be ahead of the curve. We are focused on meeting our clients' demand for digital asset products and services, which require real innovation, leveraging some existing processes, but evolving quickly to meet the demands of this digital asset space. This includes the more efficient ways to enable value transfer, the settlement of financial transactions, as well as more robust and secure protocols. The technology is transformational, but institutions might not want to be transformed just yet. They want a solution they understand as part of a long-term commitment to innovation. Addressing custody issues for institutional investors is one critical step for these markets to continue to develop. The introduction of enterprise-ready tools and solutions for institutional clients is a clear sign of a future that will enable scalability and more widespread adoption. As we continue to observe progress in this space, we are encouraged by what the future holds. And there we have it. That closes our article, Custody in the Age of Digital Assets by Fidelity Digital Assets. And I think it really just goes to show, I mean, Fidelity has been in this, been dabbling in this space for years. I think it was back, it's almost 4 or 5 years ago now that Fidelity announced they were mining and holding their own Bitcoin. And so they've been working and studying this space for a very long time. And I think this paper really goes to show how much work they've done in this space, or how much work they've done to understand this space, because this is a perfectly reasonable, I don't have any complaints with this paper at all. And it's rare to hear anything come from traditional finance that is actually knowledgeable on Bitcoin and digital assets, particularly from the technological side, but also from the kind of philosophical or the value proposition understanding of them. The section from decentralized bearer instruments to custodial centralization, and then back to decentralization, now that we've figured out the settlement and trade of these assets or securities in a digital form or in a decentralized manner, is pretty forward thinking for somebody like Fidelity, somebody in their position. That's just this one. When I first read this and kind of heard about Fidelity and their movements into this space, I've been incredibly impressed with what they have done to date. It's been a pretty remarkable thing to show, like I said, that they seem to know what they're doing. That's saying something in the traditional asset markets right now, because there are a lot of players that continue to prove their ignorance of this space. And the fact that Fidelity and then institutions like ICE and BACT, that's being released very soon, are leading the way and doing so in a very knowledgeable and measured way is incredibly good news. So we will be staying on top of these developments. I will be watching Fidelity Digital Assets very closely, because they just seem to be a pretty awesome company in that regard. And I can't wait to see what else they release on maybe how their cold storage is operating and what their custody solution is, because I don't think I've seen any specific details. We read Square's Sub-Zero very recently, and the fact that they were open sourcing their solution, so it would be really interesting to see if Fidelity did something similar. But regardless, we got a lot of fun, crazy updates in this space, and there's no telling what the next 6 months have in store, so there will be a ton of stuff to cover on this topic moving forward. Now, don't forget that I will probably have a collection on this type of article and discussion soon. It will be probably like Bitcoin in finance or the Bitcoin financial industry, something like that. I'll tweet about it and let everybody know when I get these together and sort through all the 200-some-odd episodes to see which ones fit this category. Don't forget to follow at Fidelity Digital Assets on Medium, and I will find their Twitter handle. It may be the same on Twitter, if I'm not mistaken. Refresh. I'm not sure. I will have to find their Twitter page. They do not have it linked on Medium, So I will figure out where they are on Twitter, so you can link to, so you can follow them as well and stay up to date on all the stuff they have coming out on this front. Don't forget to follow me at The Crypto Economy on Medium, Twitter, and Mastodon at the BitcoinHackers.org instance. You can check out our Reddit page at r/CryptoEconomy. But the best place to get all of these resources and the ongoing stuff that I am releasing and working on is CryptoEconomy.life. Check out the website. We got a ton of awesome stuff up there, and obviously plenty more in the works. With that, don't forget to, I'm going to put up a new Bitcoin address, which, like I said, is going to be with my Casa node. I'll put my Lightning node address up as well. So if you want to open a channel with me, or I don't have much liquidity right now, but if you want to open up a channel with me and or send me a Lightning payment, anything like that, I'll have my Lightning node address available for exactly that purpose. And we've got a little group going in Telegram right now trying to build liquidity and open up a bunch of channels with a group of with a small group from the Casa node Telegram channel. We will see how that going is. Looks like we've already got like a little, there's a little chunk of capacity going on, and I have yet to open up a channel with them, but I'm going to try to get I've been experimenting a lot with opening and closing channels of different balances and with different people to see kind of what the differences are. We will go from there, and hopefully I have a lot of fun stuff to report on that front soon. Donate to my new Bitcoin address and help fund channels and liquidity in my Lightning node that I will post in both the show notes and in the comments or in the post on CryptoEconomy.life. So check both of those things out. And of course, don't forget to check out the actual article, Custody in the Age of Digital Assets, and drop it some applause on Medium. Outside of that, I will catch you all tomorrow. Thank you so much for listening to the Crypto Economy Podcast. I got some fun stuff tomorrow. Don't miss it. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, and I'll catch you then. Take it easy, guys.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.